Okay. It is 12:49 Arizona State Board for Private Post-Secondary Education is back in session on August 27th. Next up is Aspen University, renewal application. And Mr. LaMountain, can you give us a brief introduction?
Thank you, Dr. Littman. Up before the board is a discussion and action on the 2019 license renewal of Upper Aspen University Administrative Center and Campus, a regular vocational degree license renewal. The Administrative Center for Aspen has been licensed by the State Board since June 26th of 2012, and February 2017, Aspen University opened a new location that offers a pre-licensure nursing program in that location. Aspen University's administrative and campus location are seeking renewal for the 2020 regular vocational program license and degree granting license. During the staff's review of the renewal, the parent company Aspen Group has experienced a financial loss for the last 2 years. Accordingly, the renewal has been referred to the board for review and action. Aspen University's financials show a positive net income for the last 2 years. The university itself provided a document yesterday that I put into the file, which was specific to, I believe it was unaudited, current financial for Aspen University, but not the parent company. Representing the institution today is Dr. Sherry St. Arnold and Ms. Joanne Weiss.
I'd actually like to correct that. Representing the institution today, Dr. Joanne Weiss and Michael Matthews, who is the CEO of Aspen Group, is joining us as well.
Great, thank you. Mr. Wallace, you're the lead.
Yeah, thank you. Would you either Michael or Joanne want to give us a little update on your organization, both here in the state of Arizona and nationally?
Yes, this is Mike Matthews. You guys can hear me?
Yes. Okay.
Excellent. Thank you for your time this afternoon, board members. So a little bit of a background on Aspen Group, Inc. We're publicly traded on the NASDAQ, and we own two universities, Aspen University and United States University. We acquired United States University in December of 2018, so a couple of years ago. And they're regionally accredited based out of San Diego, California, accredited by, of course, by WASC. Aspen University, I'll give you a quick background on kind of the financials of Aspen University, and then I'll jump to the public company. So Aspen University, first of all, we're on an April 30th fiscal year. So our 2020 fiscal year ended approximately 4 months ago. And we haven't completed our GAGIS audit for Aspen University for the 2020 fiscal year, and that's due in October, of course. So yes, the financials that we sent you were unaudited. So Aspen in fiscal year 2019 had a positive net income of $1.9 million. And the fiscal year that just ended in April, fiscal year 2020, the net income result was $4.65 million, or a 13% net income margin. That's an improvement of about $2.75 million year over year, which is approximately 145% improvement in the bottom line result of Aspen University year over year. So over the last couple of years, our university has become very, very profitable. From a public company perspective, Aspen Group Inc., back in fiscal year 19, as a result of United States University's significant losses, we posted a net income loss 2 years ago of approximately $9.3 million was our net income loss. Most of that was a result of United States University. When we acquired it, it was a financially troubled school. They only had 212 students at the time, and we now have approximately 2,200 students, and it's become profitable in the last 6 months. So we're quite proud of, you know, the turnaround of United States University. The net income result that, and again, we're on an April 30th fiscal. So last month we announced our fiscal year end result at Aspen Group Inc. And our net income improved by 3.6 million year over year. So we went from a loss of 9.3 million to a loss of 9.66 million. Sorry, 5.66 million. I apologize. So the net income, what's important to note is our fourth quarter result, our most recent quarter, our net income losses dropped all the way down to sub $700,000. So from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, our improvement on the bottom line has been over 100%. The company itself grew by 44% year over year. We went from a revenue for the public company of from 34 million to 49 million. So we've also publicly stated that we're tracking to become net income profitable as a public company later this fiscal year. From a cash point of view, I go to the balance sheet now. Our cash position at the end of fiscal year 2019, so a year ago in April, we had approximately $10 million of cash. We ended the fiscal year 2020 this past April. We're now up to $17.9 million of cash. We did an equity raise in January. We raised approximately $12 million, which is the reason why our balance sheet is significantly stronger than a year ago, which was strong at that time as well. Our current ratio is remains steady. It continues to be in the 3.2 to 3.3 to 1 range, both fiscal years. So again, our balance sheet is very strong. We don't expect to have to raise any additional equity between now and when we become profitable as a public company, and we believe we'll start generating cash over the next year. So again, and by the way, the valuation of our company in the last 6 months because of the improvements has actually doubled. So there's a lot of smart people on Wall Street that believe in our business plan, our business model, and see the improvements taking place. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Scott Wallace. I'm just following up on a couple of things here. What percentage of the, I think it's called the Aspen Group, from a revenue standpoint, is Aspen University?
This past fiscal year, we did 35.6 million on a total of 49. So okay. I don't have the math, but it's about two thirds.
It's the majority of it. And yes, US sir. University is the rest of it. Is that how that works?
Yes, okay. Sir.
All righty. I noticed in looking at your financial statements, but here's looking at the financial statements, that the subsidiary, or let me rephrase it, Aspen University does get some financial support from the parent. I mean, there's capital infusion there. At the same time, Aspen University seems to be growing, as you indicated, and I forgot the exact number, but a pretty strong rate. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, Aspen University year over year grew by 32%. A year ago, we did 27 million, and then this past year, it grew to 35.6. So it's a very fast growing, vibrant, very profitable business. We had a profit this year of $4.65 million on the net income line.
Okay. Now, how has COVID affected your enrollment and tuition revenues?
Yeah, I mean, we're primarily a school of nursing. 85% of our student body are degree-seeking nurses. And Aspen today now has over 10,000 active students. And COVID has actually provided some significant tailwinds for us with our pre-licensure program here in Phoenix. You guys are probably aware, our original campus in Phoenix is by the airport. It's actually the original University of Phoenix building. And we've also have an embedded nursing campus inside Honor Health on the north side of Phoenix. So our two campuses, the both pre-licensure, we saw as soon as the pandemic began, our enrollments have been significantly increasing, partly because, again, you're talking about the demographic of millennials. And a lot of the millennials work in services industries, and sadly, they're, you know, the first to kind of be affected relative to being, you know, laid off or perhaps furloughed. So we've seen an increase in enrollments of our pre-licensure program in the metro since then. So we'll be announcing our results of our first quarter next month in about 3 weeks, and can't give you any details on that, obviously, but our growth is actually increasing.
Mr. Matthews, on the pre-licensure students, have you seen your hospital partners cancel some of the clinicals based on COVID, them trying to focus more on COVID versus the pre-licensure nursing students?
Yeah, so I mean, yourself, Grand Canyon, as well as Aspen and all the other major nursing schools in the area, they have asked us to hold on the rotations for the time being. And, you know, again, it's anyone's guess in terms of exactly how long we're going to have to continue to do our simulations and our clinicals on a 100% virtual basis.
Thank you.
Okay. This is Scott Wallace. I should know the answer to this question. What does pre-licensing mean?
Oh, it means that it's a high school graduate. Perhaps it could also, in this case, it could be a graduate of an associate level degree. And we offer a 3-year accelerated BSN, Bachelor's of Science in Nursing.
Okay. Scott, pre-licensure is the initial licensing to become a nurse. It's the very it's the first start of a baccalaureate nurse.
Okay, thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you. That's the questions I have right now. Anybody else on the board have questions?
Nope,
I don't. If there are no other questions, Mr. Wallace, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I'm going to make a motion consistent with the staff recommendation. Hang on a second here. I make a motion to approve the 2020 regular vocational degree granting license renewal by stipulated agreement for the Administrative Center in Elwood campus to maintain the surety bond in the amount of $118,677 and provide electronic copies of student records on a quarterly basis.
Can we get a second?
Second, Glenn Thorpe.
Thank you. And do the folks at Aspen, do you agree to the stipulation?
Absolutely, Mr. Pittman, or Mittman, sorry. We definitely are hopeful that when we come before you a year from now, that we'll be able to talk to you about our stipulated agreement, because of course, you know, we will we'll be net income positive at that point as a public company. So.
Sounds great. Okay, Ms. Kearse, please call the roll.
Sharp, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Dick Lupke?
Aye.
Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Mike Romano?
Aye.
Dr. Paul Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck?
Aye.
And the motion passes, as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is a change of ownership.
Mr. Chairman, I recuse on this matter, please.
Okay.
I need to recuse.
Okay. We're hereby recused.
Excuse me, this is Seamus Monahan, Assistant Attorney General. Board Member Tharp, could you please state your name for the record with that recusal, please?
Oh, yes. Are we doing – oh, hold on. I see Chairside Dental up on the thing.
It's not.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. Glenn Tharp recuse. From the Unitech review.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. LeMountain, can you give us an introduction, please?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the board, before the board today is a change of ownership request from Unitech EMT. The initial license date was back in 2018. The summary is on March 6, 2020, TVG Florence Acquisition Corp. acquired 100% of the stock of the parent company of Unitech EMT and the post-secondary institutions under common ownership for approximately $135 million. TBD Florence Acquisition Corp is an indirect subsidiary of the Vistra Group. The transaction had no effect on the curriculum, faculty name, or operations of Unitech EMT. Presenting today for the institution is Mr. Steve Watkins, Mr. George Harbison, and Ms. Jessica Gonzalez. Your board lead is Mr. Lukey.
All right. Well, very good. Would Unitech like to make an opening statement?
Hi, this is Steve Watkins. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Yeah, so on the call, myself, our CFO, George Harbison, and our EMT program director in Arizona, Jessica Gonzalez. And honestly, Kevin did the best summary of the state of affairs better than I was going to do. But in a nutshell, you know, the school, Unitech EMT, when we initially applied to Arizona a few years ago, its direct ownership, and in fact, its first five levels of ownership remained unchanged. So this change of ownership was, I think, five or six levels above the school that we're going through right now. Details of that, financial implications for that, our CFO can speak to. But from my perspective, doing regulatory affairs and compliance, there hasn't been and there is no planned effect on the operations of the school from the change of ownership.
Okay, very good. So I don't have a lot of questions because this is pretty straightforward. Has there been much change or any change, substantive change, with the personnel that will be operating the school in Arizona?
This is Steve again. I'll say no, same program director, same operations manager. Jessica's on the line. I think maybe you've had some additional faculty or part-time faculty come and go, but that would just be normal business, right? That wouldn't be affected by a change of ownership.
I think Jessica's shaking her head. Yes, that's correct.
Is that right? Sorry, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Okay, yeah, Steve's correct. Hi, good afternoon.
Okay, very good. All right. Well, for the other board members, the balance sheet of Vistria is, it's pretty solid. They only have $727 million of assets. So you got to like that, right? One question on the ownership structure, and you, Mr. Watkins, you sort of alluded to that in your opening statement, is that there are 11 levels of ownership. And at the very top of the pyramid is Vistria Fund. If this local operation should ever get into trouble where they are upside down money-wise, should we as a board look to Vistria? Or is there somewhere else in this food chain that we're supposed to look to holding them accountable to their students? I've never quite seen quite the chain of ownership like this, like what you've shared with us.
Sorry, I was muted again. In the previous discussions that we had going through this process with Kevin and some other folks at the board, our understanding was it really is the ultimate. I mean, it was the desire of the board. My understanding was that it is the ultimate top parent company that would be held responsible. But that's my understanding. I want to see if George has a different opinion on that. But that was my understanding from our previous, you know, going through this process with Arizona.
Mr. Harbison, I think you might be on mute.
Is it a star six to unmute?
If he's on by phone,
yeah. By phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see him.
Right. we have a Skype chat going between me and him saying *6 to unmute. So let's see if that worked.
Mr. Watkins, while we're waiting.
Oh, there we go. Well, our CEO is actually walking down to grab him into into her office to get on the phone.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, no worries. So out of these 11 entities, I'm curious which one you work for.
So my paycheck comes from Unitech Learning Incorporated.
Okay, level 3. Okay.
Yeah, and the health ed levels above Unitech Learning, those were the same owners that we originally started with Arizona with. So those remain unchanged also.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. All right, let's. I'm going to assume that either George might or might not make it on the call. In the meantime, I'm going to open up for questions from the other board members.
This is Scott Wallace. Do any of the pre-merger, I think you said this, but I want to clarify, pre-merger owners of Unitech, are they have some position or some ownership interest in the resulting entity?
Which entity are you calling the resulting entity?
I don't really know. There's 11 of them. So do they share in the, the success mystery of Fund 2 LP? In some fashion or another.
That's definitely a CFO question. He's actually dialing in from my boss's phone right now. You know, with some exceptions, as you go up each level is 100% owner of the level below it. So,
hey,
and there are some.
Hey, Steve, can you hear us?
Yes, now we can hear you.
Yeah, sorry about that, everybody. I had technical problems. So, this is George Harbison. I'm the Chief Financial Officer. And the question I think that was being asked when I desperately ran to another office to get on this call was the fact that are there other financial resources available to support the program? And there are. Unitech, the EMT program is part of Unitech Learning. And Unitech Learning is roughly $100 million entity. And the audited financial statements that you, I believe, have are of the Unitech entity, and there's adequate cash resources, more than adequate cash resources, to support the EMT program, which is a relatively small program in the scheme of Unitech Learning. It represents less than 2% of revenue.
All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Harbison.
And I'm so sorry about the technical problem.
Yeah, no worries.
And I think Mr. Wallace's question, could you repeat it?
My question is that there's a pre-merger entity that had a license here, or we supervised, and they had owners. Do any of those owners own any equity in the resulting entity or entities?
I believe that. Could you repeat the question? I'm so sorry.
The question is that the previous owners of Unitech, did any of them end up with some equity ownership in the result?
A couple of the senior executives on Unitech were members or equity owners of the prior entity that was sold. They weren't owners of Cressy, who was the prior private equity group, but they were owners of the entity that was sold. And I believe that those, a few folks have some equity interests in the new entity.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Mr. Chairman, is there any other questions?
I do not. Okay. And hearing no others, Mr. Lupke, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I am prepared to make a motion that that we approve the supplemental license application for a change of ownership, and that the new owners would agree to a stipulated stipulation to maintain a surety bond in the amount of
$38,175. Thank you. We get a second?
Second.
Dr. Leck. And Unitech, do you agree to the stipulation for the surety bond?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Here's, please call the roll.
Yes. Mr. Glenn Tharp. Oh, nope, you're recused. Mr. Dick Lupke.
Aye.
Mr. Scott Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Mike Romano.
Aye.
Dr. Paul Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, folks at Unitech.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. Next up, Chairside Dental Academy. And Mr. LaMountain, can you give us an introduction, please?
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, members of the board, before you today is both a change of ownership and a renewal of a non-accredited vocational license for Chairside Academy. They are seeking approval for both of those. In summary, Chairside Academy was founded by and licensed by the board in 1995 and has remained in good standing since the initial licensing. Dr. Fritz, the previous owner, retired from dentistry in December of 2019, and then Dr. Fritz sold the school to the current applicants in early 2020. Representing the institution today is Ms. Dolores Feingold, Mr. Jeffrey Feingold, and Ms. Monica Kirchman. And Mr. Tharp is your board lead.
Hi, good afternoon. Would you like to make a statement about your school to the board? Hello?
I see Chairside on. I'm not sure. Jeffrey, are you on? Monica, Dolores? We cannot hear you.
I see somebody for Dolores, but it doesn't look like Dolores. Could be wrong. You're on mute, whoever's on the...
That's it. Representing Chairside?
Hi, thank you. This is Dolores Feingold.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Somewhat, yes.
Okay, this is Dolores Feingold and Monica. Can you hear us?
Monica. Yes, we can. I said, would you please make make an opening statement about your school, please?
Yeah, so first, I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to let Dolores and I have a change of ownership. We believe we have the knowledge and the skills and the experience and the desire to run this school just as well as Dr. Fritz did. Dr. Fritz is on hand. We didn't approve him to come in, but if we have any further questions, I would ask that if he could join in with us and answer any questions that we may not know.
Yes, but you guys are the owners now, so correct. I'm interested in what you know,
right,
and how you'll administer the school, not so much of what he knows. We already have licensed him for quite some time now. So
perfect. Yep.
Yep. So there are a few things. that I want some clarification. So when before it was both a dental practice and a school, correct?
Correct.
And I'm assuming that's ending now under your guys' ownership?
Yes, we plan to continue the school at another office. So it'll be the same setting as before, just a different location.
Okay. What experience do either of you have administrating school, not teaching, but administrating programs?
Well, I have been involved with the school for 19 years, and so I was also the teacher, and I was, involved in administrating, involving signing students up. I was involved in all the different aspects of the school.
Who is going to be responsible for records retention, paperwork, all that? Because as you know, the board has you have to keep these in perpetuity for student files.
Right. So we.
I'm sorry. I was going to say that to me. I am sorry about the mute button. I just found it. My apologies.
No worries.
Yeah, so Jeff and I are going to be doing that. I'm the office manager at this location. I'm the office manager at my location now, and that's where we're going to help to run the school, and I will be keeping all the records as I do that in my own office right now.
Okay. It's not just teaching. There's a lot of administrative duties that come along, and I don't necessarily see that reflected in your structure. The other thing, and I probably asked Mr. Chairman, Dr. Mittman, and perhaps Scott Wallace, is the financials. I'm not a financial expert, but I definitely deal with them. And you have very little operating equity, it appears, and such like that. So I'm wondering how fiscally you plan to sustain should you not get the students that you want.
Jeff, you want to answer that?
Yes, we definitely have a plan in place. Both of the owners have salaries that they can rely upon. Don't use much of that if we need any type of, Monica has rental income, and we have been just offered a loan. Speaking with somebody, a personal loan we could definitely use upon, as well as a last resort, a line of credit on our house, seeing that we have plenty of equity, even in any downturn in the housing market, we definitely have equity to be able to get a line of credit.
Yeah, because running schools are expensive, even if they're small. And what I fear is before you were combined, the previous owners also ran a dental practice, which, I think in a large part, as I review, help fund the school, that's now gone away. So it's a concern for me. So when I'm done with my question, I'm hopeful some of my other people will pick up on some of the financial stuff that goes along with that. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, because that is. Go ahead.
So the location that we'd like to change to is my day job that I work, and I've been here for 11 years, and the doctor that I work for is letting us do the school here. So there's very little to no cost involved as far as the rent. We won't have a rent. It's going to be a very minimal amount to him, just for a liability standpoint. But we're not.
Do you have a lease with him?
Excuse me?
Do you have a lease with him?
Yeah.
And what's the, how much are you going to be paying for that, roughly?
It's going to be $100 a class, so it's approximately $1,000 per 10-week session. So it'll be $100.
And what's the period of that?
For over 10 weeks, that's what our class is going to be.
No, the period of the lease.
Oh, every year we're going to renew it, once a year.
So in a year, he could come back and say, I don't really want you doing it here anymore. And
yeah, but he's a young dentist, and he's not going anywhere for a while, so we don't anticipate that happening.
I don't either, but I sit on this board and you won't believe the things I see that happen that they didn't think would happen, you know, right. Stuff. I'm not right. trying to call your good intentions. I fully yeah. feel like you have them. Don't
I can long. Certainly ask him to extend it for 5 years or more, and I know he would do that.
Might be something you'd want to explore. And again, absolutely. I can't tell you you have to, but.
Great advice, though.
Yeah.
We do have a backup plan as well. A lot of strip malls have openings.
A lot of what? COVID. Sorry. What'd you say? I'm sorry,
I apologize. Jeffrey.
I didn't understand what you said. You cut out.
That might
little
be.
Technology.
Yes. Okay. Yes, I just changed to my phone, by the way. So that's the reason for my technology things. So what I was saying is that we've noticed a lot of strip malls are vacant now. So our backup plan would be to approach one of those nearby, and we could certainly rent from them.
Yeah. Again, I just want you to have a solid plan. You're going to, you know, one of our main goal or you know, one of our main charges on this board is consumer protection. And that is making sure that you don't leave students in the lurch any which way when it comes fiscally, when it comes to building, when it comes to delivering what you're supposed to do. And so those are why I ask a lot about the cash position in the financing. And I'm asking some of these other questions about like a lease and such, because we have seen those go wrong. Moving on to the enrollment agreement. First, I'll say when you do these applications, these enrollment checklist and the catalog checklist, they're supposed to be cross-referenced, and then this one isn't. Cross-reference mean, you know, the first item on the checklist, you should put a one next to where it is in your enrollment agreement or your catalog. It saves us a lot of work. And it helps focus us, and that wasn't done. So that's just an editorial to do in the future should you make it through this process.
I apologize. We did do that afterwards. I guess I originally did not understand what the cross-referencing mean. Then I got it, and I did that, and that was in red.
Okay. Are you we have certain words that are forbidden, you know, most of the time and we don't like to use. And one of the main ones is free. Okay. We can say at no cost and or something like that. So I would just call under the tuition. You said plus free registration to Capital One of our X-ray certification course. So I would like that change to at no cost or take it out. In general, I don't know why you have to call that out, because you say, which includes books, prices. I don't know why you can't just say, you know, and one registration for X-ray, but it would strike free from that. Okay.
Okay.
Refunds, yeah, it looked pretty good. I want to go to page 5 of the enrollment agreement, and it probably will follow in the catalog as well. You say under the grievance procedure, should student at any time have a complaint, grievance, blah, blah, blah. You don't time limit that at all. So say you've been open since 1995. Say somebody comes in that went to school then and says, I want to file a complaint. You know, it's that's certainly outside of our scope of the time frame. So you're saying at any time, anybody that ever attended your school can come back and file a grievance.
We should specify it to during that particular class.
You specified. I'm not going to tell you how to do it. I'm just saying that leaves open into, because you do time frame it like for your guys' response. You know, you got 5 days to respond and those type of things. But those are something you might want to look at.
Of course.
You have no payment plan, so that's fine. Let me move on to the catalog, please. Let's see. Same thing with the cross-references. Apparently, I just didn't get that. Just so I'm clear, is there no externship component of this program or clinical component?
We require them for a minimum of 10 hours externship during the class.
Where is that listed?
That can be at any office that they
choose. No. Where's that listed in your catalog?
Oh, let me see what page.
It's entirely possible that I missed it. Oh, here it is. Clinical provider training for a 10-hour externship. Okay, where will they do these at?
They can do that as they choose. They can do it. Oops, excuse me, sorry. They can do it at their dental office that they go to. We have limited seating here at this office during Monday through Thursday, or any other office. They can call around. We can certainly help them call around. We've done that in the past to find them an externship. 10 hours is pretty
easy. Well, you don't say anything. It's highly unusual that you would make it's certainly an area of great concern for me, is that you would have a student be responsible trying to get their own externship. If it is part of their education, you're responsible for having signed contracts in place to be able to deal with that load, okay? So you're going to need to tighten that up. That's just too loose. So they can call around or do the debt. They're not the professionals. You are contracting to give them an education, and if it's a required component of the education, then you need to have mechanisms in place of which to make sure that happens.
And it does. And certainly, if anyone has that struggles with it, we give them the opportunity to choose their own office. And if they have any difficulties, we're right there to help them, and we would be happy to do that.
You should have signed agreements, though, so that you can go. Somebody asks you that with those problems. So. Okay. Again, on page 3 of the catalog is that free word under number 4, tuition. Okay. So strike.
Okay, we'll switch that.
Yeah. Okay, and then I didn't have a problem. Your refund policy was in order. Okay. This is a question, I guess, for the executive director. So, Mr. Chairman and executive director, I'm a little confused on arbitration agreements. I thought we reached a point a while ago where they weren't supposed to be put in catalogs. Are they fine? Just a yes or no.
Yeah, this is Keith. They're allowed to have them as long as it doesn't circumvent the complaint process with the board.
Okay, and it does, and theirs doesn't, so I'm fine.
Right. Yeah, most of it's standard arbitration.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Then on page 7, and I'm going to go to a different document too. This is concerning because you guys engage in what we like to commonly call puffery here, which is you make a lot of statements that aren't cited, and they seem grandiose. And they could be very misleading for the public. Okay, so I want to go through a couple of those. And that's on the end of page 7. In short, there are some reasons you'll have a better chances of getting hired when you graduate from dental than any other school. Well, that's tell me where that came from, what sort independent source is that cited from? And
so we've been in business for 25 years, and we often have offices call us because they know that we have the reputation. We do a great job.
Just to cut you off, I've been doing this 21 years running schools, and I've always had dental assistant programs as part of those schools. And I can guarantee you that offices call us every day too. That doesn't make us the best.
Sure.
So what are you, is that just be honest, is that just fluff that you put in there? Do you have anything to back that up?
No, we really, so we are dental assistants, and we've been dental assistants, so we know the ins and outs of dental assisting. So we just pride ourselves on knowing that we offer the best education.
You don't know that. How do you know that without an independent source or study?
Well, oftentimes we will, we have a program we set up to email the students and ask for feedback on the program. And
okay, let's just cut you.
If I could jump in here real quick. So I think what my fellow board member is trying to bring forward is, at times we understand as you're getting into the school business, you're very proud in what you're offering. What he is trying to help you appreciate is the consumers will bring this forward as you made an unsubstantiated claim, and you are exposing yourselves to risk as a result. And as such, you need to really go over all your marketing materials with a fine-tooth comb from the student or consumer perspective to say, can I prove this or not? And if I cannot, you should absolutely remove it.
I 100% concur with them. You have no way of proving that you are the best over any other dental academy in the city, state, or anything else, unless there is an independent person who is ranking you for some reason based on certain actual data. So unless you have that, you cannot say that because it you cannot prove it's true.
Right, and we get complaints all the time of people challenging that. I'm honestly just trying to help you on this thing. I'm not trying to be critical.
Yeah, this is great. We appreciate the feedback. Mm-hmm. We're just very confident. So
it would be safe, Glenn. It would be safe for them to say that their dental program is better than the one at UTI.
At where?
It's better than the one at UTI.
That would be a safe comment to make.
That's an automotive motorcycle school. Yeah, I would say it probably would be. But okay, back to life here. So the other than that, I think your catalog itself, you know, with those changes, is fine for me. You know, I think you did a nice job on that. I think you did a nice job on keeping it simple. We see a lot of people getting into the school business that just decide to. They think more is better, and we get all this stuff. Under the document that says it's titled "Why Chairside Dental Academy," which is part of your marketing materials, again, there's a bunch of puffery in there that's not cited. When office is looking to hire a new dental, we are the first they call. Again, I don't know how you prove that. You'll be trained by people who are practicing what they teach. Therefore, no salary is needed since that's okay. They just don't know stuff. No other school can say that. This one is really bothersome. Our instructors have been trained in teaching skills by professional educators. They don't just know the subject. They know no other school can say that. How can you say that no other school can say that? Again, I run schools of all kind, and all our instructors are professionally trained and checked off. So how can you say that? I'm assuming you can't because there's no independent.
We will reword that.
Yeah, we just reword that. You know, dental office. Just look at this whole document. I don't want it to go through, but anything that is a declarative statement that isn't backed up by an independent source or properly footnoted, get rid of it because if that gets out in public. Lastly, how do you? Plan of marketing. You have very, very little. I think I saw $100 on your thing to marketing. How do you plan on getting it? How many students do you have now or have you had over the last year?
So right now we have currently about 15 students that are ready to sign up. We plan on doing marketing, social media. We have Facebook, Instagram. That seems to be where we get most of our students from. We have just a big history of students referring other students, so the reputation comes into play. So we, in the past, we've done different types of marketing that didn't work with flyers and things like that. Right now, it's a lot of word of mouth.
Sorry, you're cutting out. So your internet is very choppy for where you're at. I don't know what's going on, but I think I got the most of that. I just would ask that you look at how you're going to market and attract students. Over the last decade, I've seen, and I've been personally one that have gotten these applications from many, many, many schools like yours that are, the smaller dentals. And I see on the closure list almost every time we go through it, those same schools because they just couldn't sustain with getting things. So you are going to have to, just a word of advice, you are going to have to look, maybe now the initial excitement, but you're going to have to look on a continuous basis how you're going to maintain a flow of students. Okay?
Okay. For sure.
That's really all my questions. I'll turn it over to my fellow board members if I could.
Okay, Mr. Lupke.
You're on mute, Mr. Lupke.
Thank you, Glenn.
Yep.
So you mentioned that you're going to the school's going to move to a new dentist. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And how many operatories does the new dentist have at his office?
There's 5 operatories here.
Okay. And so you're looking to possibly start 15 students. Now, does that office, dental office, have a classroom? Or are they all, these 15 students, are they going to crowd around the 5 operatories?
No, there's a separate area that we have designated to be a classroom.
Okay. And what would you guesstimate the size of that classroom to be?
The square footage, let's see, I would be guessing, I would say 20 by 30.
Okay. All right. It's decent size. And the new dentist is okay with 15 students coming through the practice on a daily basis?
Yes, weekly basis, yes.
Did I lose?
So coming back to Mr. Tharp's kind of Q&A around the lease and that, I think with the financials and the available cash, you know, the contingency option of finding a location at a strip mall, for example, you'd still have all equipment necessary to get your hands on to sustain that. And we have experienced in the past where, for whatever reason, parties differ and decide to no longer make space available. And so 15 people start a program, and 3 weeks in, it's not really working out, and you're notified you're going to have to find a new place, and that's going to require you to make a substantial investment in equipment or potentially find a new relationship to enter into, leaving 15 students in a very, very difficult position at that point. And so that does give me pretty significant pause, just because it does seem your financial availability of cash seems very limited in a situation like that at this point in time.
Yeah, my thought on that is I know 2 other dentists that have offered to do it. I would like to keep it close by my house, and this is where I live, and I'm familiar with this office. But there are backup offices that have the space and are willing to let us do it the same in their office if we need it. And we're hoping we wouldn't have to do that, but it's available to us. I'd rather do that than buy more equipment. It's all equipped already. We've both been in the field over 25 years, so we've grown to know a lot of dentists and grew a good relationship with them. It's kind of like a little family, what we have going on here, so I'm not worried about that.
Please.
Can I just ask a clarification point there? Sorry, Mr. Romano. So the equipment you list on here, did you buy the equipment when you bought that school?
Yes, we bought everything that was available to us from the school.
So what, where?
The supplies and some of the equipment, not the dental chairs.
Oh, so that's not, because you list that on your balance sheet. I mean, so none that equipment, the $15,000 worth of equipment, the $16,000, that's not chairs or anything. I'm just trying to figure out what you own and what the dental office that you guys are leasing are going to provide.
Basically, the leasing office we're going to be using is what cannot be removed from the office. So the chairs, the dental lights, we have all our own materials, our handpieces, everything that we need, all our disposable items. We're providing all of that ourselves, and we bought that from Fritz when we bought the school. So we're basically using the building with the lights and the dental lights and some of the sterilization equipment.
So if you had to move, say, and we don't know that, and we don't expect that to happen, but if you did, you'd have to buy your own chairs and lights and get everything set up, right?
If we're not able to go to another office, but that would be our first choice.
Okay, thank you.
And please don't misunderstand. We're not asking this because we're trying to be critical on you and your plan. We clearly can hear your passion and your desire to want to move in this direction. We're also trying to be sensitive to the consumer experience as well and the disruption that could ultimately happen to people who jump into a program and suddenly find themselves very displaced or having to go across town and those types of things. So that's why we ask these types of questions.
Yes,
so.
Absolutely.
Of course. Yeah, the interest in this area has been phenomenal compared to where the last location was. And in my eyes, as far as, you know, I'm in this office every day. I have patients come through every day. They're asking me constantly when the school is going to start up. They have three friends. And, you know, at this office, we don't do marketing because it's word of mouth through our patients, which is the best compliment for us. We're hoping the school will be the same way. So we don't have to spend a lot of money marketing, but it works really well in this zip code that we're in now. That's why we thought this area would be ideal.
Okay. Any other board members have questions?
Are either of you employed by the new dentist?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So you'll be doing both teaching, administrating, and chair side.
Correct.
Wow.
The teaching's on Saturday.
Yeah, the teaching is on set. Overlap.
All right.
This is Scott Wallace. Did you put together a business plan and forecast what you're going to do the first year and maybe thereafter to make sure that you cover contingencies and that this endeavor is worth it, you know, for the risks that you're going to take?
Yes, we did. And Jeff, can you answer that?
Yes. The application had a really good format for that, and we put down plans for that. I would just like to clarify at this point, if I may. It was 10 students per class, not 15. So in a location, I can understand the concern with 15 people. That's why we have our classes at 10. And we can always extend to a Tuesday and Thursday class as well to keep the class sizes down. I hope that answers the question. The application did have a good business plan for and our contingencies are in place for getting extra funding if we do need to. We were just offered a personal loan for this, hearing about the company.
Where is that business plan? Did you include that?
In the application.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
Yes, so this is Paul Mittman. I have a couple of questions. So you guys made the mistake of checking all of the no boxes, which is sometimes happens, but you admitted in question number 9 that you are not current in your payments of federal, state tax liabilities and workers' comp insurance. So I think people frequently do that. So I guess the first question is that true? And if not, could you make sure that you just correct it? The second, are a couple of follow-ups to Mr. Tharp's and Mr. Lukey's comments. I think, you know, the prospect of going to a strip mall would be way more expensive than what you're already doing. Yeah. So Mr. Tharp's comment about getting as long a lease or an agreement as you can would be good. But then, you know, the other point that Mr. Lupke brought up is that, you know, there's a little bit of a kind of a blending of at least one of your employment at the dental practice and also running a separate business within the dental practice. And I don't know exactly how to resolve this, but you probably want to have a conversation either with a lawyer or an accountant or both, because if something goes wrong and a patient has a, you know, has an adverse event or something like that, and they sue the practice, they're also going to sue you. If a student has a complaint against you, they're certainly going to sue the practice as well, because probably the practice has deeper pockets than you do. So you just want to go in there and make sure that you're protecting yourself. And also the dentist, it sounds like you have a very good working relationship with, but
yes,
you know, but it's like, it's when things get really stressful that, you know, that those kinds of relationships get frayed. And so I would just be very careful about, you know, just about putting up whatever firewalls you need so that, you know, so that, you know, you're each protected in that respect.
Of course.
And that's all that I have. Unless there are any other questions, Mr. Tharp, would you like to make a motion?
I don't know. Mr. LaMountain, would that require two motions since there's two things on the books for them?
Yeah, they are two separate, so it would be best if we just did two motions.
Okay, let's do the first one and vote that up or down. So, hold on, just let me get to my page. So, for the change of ownership, I make a motion that we approve the change of ownership. They've met the requirements pursuant to the ARS standards with the following stipulation. You got to maintain the $15,000 surety bond with that. So,
Dick Lipke, second.
Okay. Do you agree to that stipulation? Chairside Dental. Sorry. Hello?
Monica, can you just say yes, please?
Yes, we do.
Yes, please.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. All right.
Please call the roll.
My roll call, please.
Call the roll.
All right. Mr. Glenn Tharp.
Aye.
Mr. Dick Lipke.
Aye.
Mr. Scott Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Mike Romano.
Aye.
Dr. Paul Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Aye.
Perfect. And the motion passes for the change of ownership.
Okay. Second motion I'd make is regarding the renewal application. I make a motion that we renew the regular vocational program license for Chairside Dental Academy pursuant to the ARS standards with the following stipulations, which is the same thing. One is the same thing as to maintain the $15,000 surety bond. Remove the word free, go through your marketing stuff and remove any puffery that's declarative statements that aren't put on, you know, that aren't backed up with an independent source. Thank you.
And pay your taxes.
And your taxes. Yeah. So, and, you know, strongly encourage that. Sorry, you know, nobody calls me all day. And strongly encourage you take heed to what we said on the lease and those type of things. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. We get second, please.
Yes. Second. Dr. Leck, second.
Okay. Ms.
Pierce. By roll call vote, Mr. Glenn Tharp.
Aye.
Mr. Dick Lipke.
Aye.
Scott Wallace.
Aye.
Dr. Paul Mittman.
Aye.
Mr. Mike Romano.
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you. The motion passes.
Thank you, and we wish you the best of luck. Okay.
Hey, Dr. Mittman, if I could, real quick, hey, Dolores and Monica, when you update the catalog, enrollment agreement, marketing material, just email them directly to me, Keith Blanchard,
and then I'll go over them, but your license won't be released until the updated information is submitted and approved. And I've taken all the notes, so I know it's been requested.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for everyone's time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is PDH Academy. Mr. Lucy is the board lead, and Mr. LaMountain, can you give us a brief introduction?
Great. Mr. Chair and members of the board, before the board today is the original conditional non-accredited vocational license program for PDH Academy. You have all of the application and information that has been provided to you. Mr. Lukey is the board lead, and representing the institution is Ms. Katie Nishi, Mr. Mark Newcomer, and Ms. Chloe Lawrence.
All right. Well, good afternoon. Would PDH Academy like to make an opening statement?
Yes, I would. Hi, good afternoon. My name is Katie Nishi. I am a content and compliance coordinator here at PDH Academy. I have been working in the home inspection education field for over 16 years. PDH Academy is a trusted nationwide continuing education and pre-license education provider. We have been providing education to professionals since 2013. Our instructors are experts in their field with over 75 years of industry experience. We are dedicated to providing all students with a positive learning experience. Our well-established operating procedures ensure that our support staff is highly trained to assist students throughout their course and upon completion. In Arizona, we would like to offer three options to our students for home inspection training. These include an online option, a hybrid option consisting of online and live classroom training, and a second hybrid option that includes online and virtual webinar training. These options will allow students to learn in an environment that best meets their learning needs. Our programs have been carefully designed so students can confidently enter the home inspection business with the necessary skills and knowledge to be successful in their new career. We look forward to offering our training in Arizona. Thank you.
All right, very good. Well, having been raised in nearby Wauwatosa, it's only appropriate that I get your file. So.
Very nice.
Yeah. We find the small connections, and we really appreciate those.
Yes, yes. We're just glad you're not from Kenosha.
Thank you, Jesus, right now.
Yeah.
We are.
Yeah, I'm from Kenosha right now.
So you had mentioned that PDH has got a history. Can you tell the board a little bit about the other programs that are not related to home inspection that PDH teaches?
We get everybody that's not talking to mute, please. I'm getting a lot of conversation background noise and making it hard to hear. Thank you.
All right. So, Katie.
I can answer that question, too. So,
okay. Thank you.
With PDH Academy, we do continuing education for architects, engineers, land surveyors, contractors. We also do pre-licensing education for home inspectors and real estate agents.
Okay. So I'm guessing that the corporate structure is layered into many LLCs. Is that an accurate statement?
Correct.
Okay. And so the one that the balance sheet that you provided the board is very narrow. It's only that part of the larger corporation that is teaching home inspection. I'm sorry, that was a question.
Yeah, no, I'm pulling it up right now.
Okay. So the one I'm looking at has cash assets of about $658,000.
No, that's actually at a consolidated level.
So that is the nationwide entity.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you help us understand a little bit about the $35 million of goodwill that you've posted as an asset?
Yeah, there was a transaction. The company we took on an equity partner in December of last year. Okay. So that was the is part of the that process as far as the purchase of the company.
Okay. All right. Very good. So looking through your application, the one area, most of it looked just fine, but the one area that I have a little bit of a concern for is your refund policy. The one you submitted for Arizona is compliant, but if I'm a student and I go to your website and I go through and I look for refunds for the parent company, the way that the refund policy reads is that I can contact customer service within 5 business days of my course purchase, okay, for assistance with returns and cancellations. However, customers who cancel their orders within 5 business days of the course purchase, they will receive a full refund. After 5 business days, however, all sales are final and no refunds will be provided.
Yeah, we can get that. That's actually related to the continuing education courses. So we could definitely, we'll add something on to that as far as specific for the home inspection pre-licensing. But that's the continuing education refund policy.
This refers to continuing ed?
Yep.
Okay, very good. Thank you. All right, I will yield the microphone to my other board members for questions.
This is Scott Wallace. I want to go back to Goodwill. So that I understand things, you have some equity infusion and some debt capital that you raised. And with that, you bought a business or tell me how the $35 million came to be.
That was the, so that was the equity infusion. That was the purchase price of the new private equity owners that came in.
Okay, they brought equity in the form of cash, I guess. What did you use the cash for?
I mean, the cash was for them to buy equity.
Well, I understand. They got equity in it, and that increased the equity. Then for a moment of time, you had a boatload of cash, maybe $35 or $30-some-odd million, and you bought did you buy an entity that's just basically all goodwill, or I'm confused.
Well, the private equity came in and paid $35 million to the existing shareholders. And so the existing shareholders is where that payment went to.
Okay. Okay.
And with these training companies, right, there's not a lot of assets, so most of it goes right into goodwill and then into amortization. So there's not any big fixed assets or anything that they're buying. So the most of it when you're buying a training company is goodwill. So.
Okay. I'm not sure I'd call it goodwill, but I understand what happened with the cash infusion. It went to the previous owners. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Previous owners. Yeah, the business that was in it was a school, and these guys came in and gave $35 million and basically bought out the other owners.
Correct.
Okay, and that happened when?
That was December of 2019.
Okay. All righty. Do you have any financial statements that have an outside CPA associated with them?
Well, so the only for the stub period from after the acquisition. So right now the audit is only from December 16th or 17th through December 31st. So it's only for that stub period.
Okay.
So that's where the audited financials are. And then going forward, we'll have audited financials as well.
Okay. I don't know whether we have it or back here, but I'll look for it.
Okay.
Dr. Mittman, I'm ready to make a motion unless there's more questions for.
I guess I had one other question also on the balance sheet. There's in the long-term liabilities, there's a term loan for $12.5 million. Could you just elaborate a little bit on that and also tell us what the current portion of that loan is?
Actually, I will message my CPA or my CFO on the current portion of that. While I give you the answer to the other one.
And how long is
the question about your they came in, it was the whatever, you know, around whatever the purchase price around $35 million, but they came in with 23 million of equity and 12 million of debt type of thing. So that was that term loan, the loan was regarding the acquisition as well.
So I read that the current owners, so PDH Learning, owes $12.5 million to the people who sold the business?
No, it's an outside lender. It's Tree Hill. I forget the name of the – it's a outside lender.
And so that would be that $12.5 million was a portion of the $35 million that needed to be raised to purchase the company from the previous owners.
Correct. So yeah, there's part equity, part debt. Typical kind of private equity transaction.
Okay. So, Mr. Newcomer, do you know if you're servicing that debt monthly?
We are, yeah. So the monthly service, it's about $90,000 a month, something like that.
So that would make your somewhere in your current liabilities, there should be a little over $1 million in debt service.
Well, yeah, I'm waiting for them. The structure of it, that's just interest. And then there's some, because that's the interest piece, not the current piece. And that should be in the current piece is whatever the current principal payment that's due in the next 12 months.
Yeah, Paul, this is Scott Wallace. The current portion would only be the principal that's due within the next 12 months. So his debt service might be largely interest. That's what it sounds like. So the current portion wouldn't be 90,000 times 12. It would be something less than that, whatever the terms are. I don't know.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
And cash flow is good. I mean, we're on target to hit over $3.5 million of EBITDA this year. Our cash balances are $2.7 million. So we're definitely, from a financial standpoint, we're very healthy.
Okay.
All right. So somebody put in $20 million. Was that a venture capital firm, or what kind of entity was that that invested the $20 million?
Private equity.
Private equity. Okay. Mm-hmm. All righty. Okay.
Okay. Mr. Unless there's any other questions, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would. I make a motion that we approve PDH Academy for a conditional vocational program license with the stipulation that they secure a $15,000 surety bond.
Okay, and can we get a second, please?
Second.
I'll second. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, that was Dr. Leck.
Second. Dr. Leck. Second. Dr. Leck.
Any other discussion? And folks at PDH, do you agree to the stipulation for the $15,000 surety bond?
Yes, we agree.
Okay. Ms. Pierce?
I will call vote. Mr. Glenn Tharp?
Aye.
Mr. Dick Lupke?
Aye.
Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Mike Romano?
Aye.
Dr. Paul Mittman?
Aye.
And Dr. Jennifer Leck?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to Arizona.
Next up, Arizona Technical Training. Our lead is Mike Romano. And Mr. Lamont, please give us a brief introduction.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the matter before the board is an original conditional non-accredited vocational program license application for Arizona Technical Training. Representing the applicant today is Betty Sulemanov, and I believe Lupe, and I'm sorry, Lupe, I didn't get your last name.
Patrick.
Okay, and your board lead again is Mr. Romano.
All right. Would the school like to make an opening statement?
Yes, I would. First of all, I'd like to start by thanking the members of the board for taking time today to review our initial application to license our allied health program. And I want to give special thanks to Mr. Keith Blanchard and Ms. Terry Stanfield for all your support and guidance to this initial process. With that being said, Arizona TTI is committed to preparing students for success in the healthcare system of the future. Our programs emphasize the education and the training needed to acquire a career in the healthcare community. Arizona TTI recognizes that every student who enrolls does so with the goal of achieving training that will enable him or her to prepare for career enhancement. Therefore, we are dedicated to assisting each student in reaching his or her goals. In discharging its responsibility to each student, the school offers training which adequately provides the knowledge and the skills needed for entry-level employment. In addition, AZTTI believes that each student deserves an equal opportunity to gain entry-level skills and employment in order to become a productive citizen of the healthcare community.
All right. Thank you for that. And thank you for the time and the preparation of the materials as well. I've had a chance to go through them, as I'm sure my counterparts have as well. I had a few things that I just wanted to kind of cover from what I went over to make sure I'm understanding some things clearly. How many students do you anticipate servicing during any period of time?
At this moment, our seating with you, we're actually really emphasizing on COVID and the 6 feet separation, et cetera, so at this moment with the way the facility sits, we can actually, following the CDC guidelines, we can actually enroll 9 students.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed you're working out of a square footage of around 1,700, a little north of that, and it seems as though you have about close to 600 square feet in classroom space, and then about 500 square feet in lab space as well. So I was really trying to appreciate kind of the tight quarters that people are going to be in with even at nine. It's pretty snug. It still feels like.
We have pretty much spaced our classroom where the tables are pretty set apart. We actually did measure the 6 feet. We have one table across from each other with the spacing, and we have one chair per table. And then, of course, the lab. I think at the time that we do the students for as far as the laboratory skills, we would have one instructor to one student ratio, with because of the limited size that square footage that we do have at the time.
Okay. Well, obviously you've given it thought and consideration around the social distancing. Like I said, the square footage just seemed snug, and it seemed very constrained from how many students you could have there. Just kind of working through in regards to the grievance policy in the catalog, and the catalog was really in pretty good shape, so thank you for that. I did notice you only offer one day for a student to essentially submit a complaint, and certainly you're within your rights to do that, but it just seemed like a really short timeline, and then you afford yourself 10 days to respond back to what they have to essentially provide the same day.
Okay.
So I'd ask you to give that some thought and consideration of just sensitivity. We often can see giving a student a 5-day window or something of that nature. It also affords them the opportunity to work through the issue with the instructor, and that tight timeline would say, I have to work it out with the instructor right there and then, and if I don't like it, I'm going to need to file a complaint right away. And I don't think that was your intention, so I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Thank you for that. As many times as I retyped and made changes and reworded, that just could have been a typo error, because you're correct. I think that should have been 5 business days as opposed. If I look at the old catalog that I had to retype and look at, that was originally 5 business days. So that is a typo error. Thank you very much for that. Appreciate that.
Totally understand. Now, I imagine you were on the call a little earlier and you heard my counterpart talking about marketing puffery. And so I think you can probably take away from some of your marketing materials some sensitivity you might have around statements of an accelerated program. And it was hard to really understand what that meant. And you don't need to describe that here. It just, I wanted you to have awareness of that. And just some of the other claims that you had. Let me pull up that marketing material here really quickly. Sorry for not having it already up. Because specifically, I did want to call out, you talk about things like day and evening and weekend schedules, but I never actually saw a calendar of class times offered. You do have a holiday schedule, but I'm imagining you're probably going to try and figure out when you'll offer classes based on the student count you end up having who has interest in this. So, again, you're putting out there, if I come to you today, you're going to have a day, evening, or weekend offering for me. And I don't know, you'll have to decide if you're truly going to meet that. So, again, just trying to have sensitivity from a consumer standpoint. When you bring this stuff forward, what that looks like. And then, in regards to hands-on teaching in real-life simulation labs, I believe you're probably referring more so to the externships that you're offering. Certainly, you have a lab area, too, but just, again, sensitivity around what an expectation might be for the consumer. Okay?
Okay. Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah, could you take just a moment though, give us some feel or perspective around what you perceive to be the external opportunities for the students? Have you started to enter into any discussions to create that for students? We know that there are some limited capacity based on current environment. So any current discussions or relationships you have existing right now to help support that externship program?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did submit an agreement. It's an externship agreement, and it's just generic. And I have been teaching for about 25 years, and I took some time off. And in the other aspects of my teaching, that was one of my biggest strengths, was my externship, students going to a different externship site, and also they them reaching out to the schools, asking for students and possible hires, etc. Right now, I have solicited 10 facilities, all from different practices, cardiology, family practice, pediatrics, dermatology, and a couple of urgent cares. And of course, at this moment, you know, to keep us in you know, contact, let us know when, you know, you're ready, when you know, what the process is. And of course, you know, being our program is 7 months long for medical assisting. As soon as we are, you know, ready, they would be willing to sign the agreement. So we have that in place. And that was one of the talks that we did with the different practices that we've used in the past. Are more than willing to sign as long as they, you know, we know that we are ready to go and move forward with our enrollment process.
Thank you for that. And part of this is just really appreciating, I can tell your focus and intensity, so appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Coming back around the marketing, I did have one more piece on that as well. In the front side of your catalog, you talk about 50 years combined experience out in the field. And certainly the resumes that you provided did support that piece of it. But again, those are sometimes some areas of sensitivity where students feel like they're coming in. And it did seem as though you had some people who were maybe a little newer to the industry, I'll say, where somebody may misinterpret that the 50 years combined. So again, okay. Similar to before, go through really give thought and consideration of how you're representing your organization, and then ultimately how the consumer may pick that apart at times. That's what we're always trying to have sensitivity for. And with this being an initial application, we want to try and give you that guidance to help you be successful.
Thank you so very much. Appreciate that. We will surely look into that. Thank you.
So, again, really nice job in regards to the preparation and the materials there. I didn't really see anything else. It might have just been because it was late at night for me, but I will open it up to my other board members to see if they have any other follow-up questions.
I do not. You covered what I had.
No, thank you.
Dr. Menman, I believe you're on mute. I wasn't sure if you were going to ask me if I wanted to make a motion or if you had some questions.
You know, I just have a few questions on, you know, for the start of the year, you know, I assume that these are startup costs. You know, net income of minus $32,000 or a loss of $32,000. There's not a whole lot of cash and current assets listed at $534. And so what's your, you know, how do you project being able to you know, get this off the ground, and what other do you have to, move forward?
I'm going to turn this over. That question would go over to our owner, Betty. So here you go. And she was having a hard time. You were kind of fading in and out, Doctor. So I think what the question was about our financials, how are we going to keep the school going while we're waiting for enrollment? Is that my understanding? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it looks like you lost about $32,000 at the start of the year. And there's, you know, on the balance sheet, there's only about $500 in cash. And so how much longer can you continue like that? You know, what are you going to do to be able to, you know, to get this off the ground?
Hello, everyone. This is Betty. I'm the owner. I've been, I have the school since last year of March, paying everything, and everything is fine because I have another business. I have a home care, non-medical for 13 years. So all of my assets comes from there.
Okay. So in other words, the Arizona Technical Training Institute may have limited resources, but you have the resources to augment the company, right?
Correct.
Okay. You know, it lists your, the application lists your, you know, your personal finances, which look, mm-hmm. you know, significant. But you have cash, you know, to be able to sustain this.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I have.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm. That was the only question that I had.
So it's probably important we get them started on business, right?
Yeah. I would really appreciate it. They're holding up there.
All right. So let's see if we can, if there are no other questions, I'll go ahead and make a motion.
Go ahead.
No more questions.
I would like to propose that we approve the conditional vocational program license application with the stipulation of the $15,000 surety bond maintained.
Second. Glenn Tharp.
Glenn Tharp. Dick Rupke impersonation. So we have a motion from Mr. Romano, a second from Mr. Tharp. Is there any other discussion? And Ms. Suleimanov, do you agree to the $15,000 surety bond to maintain that?
Yes.
Ms. Girth?
I will call vote. Mr. Glenn Tharp?
Aye.
Mr. Dick Lukey?
Aye.
Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Mike Romano?
Aye.
Dr. Paul Mittman?
Aye.
And Dr. Jennifer Leck?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah. Off to work we go.
Okay. Next on the agenda is board business. Mr. LaMountain, I'm going to turn it over to you to discuss the budget for the upcoming year.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And members of the board, our budget is due, our fiscal 22 budget is due on September 1st, so just early next week. I will tell you, this is my first time doing the budget fully by myself, and what I would like to say for all of that, coming from private sector into public sector is, in as far as budget packaging, is stepping back about 27 years. So I had to find a computer that would run an access program that was probably built in 1988 in a government building someplace. So I just wanted to get that out of the way because it was certainly an interesting process. But muddling through it, spending a lot of time, I've got it to a point where I think I have a level of confidence that we can meet what the budget has in it. So I'm going to just do it at a high level. In your board folders, you've got the actual budget that I will submit. It's about, how many pages? It's a 36-page budget. So the review process, so that the board understands the review process, is that it'll be submitted on the 1st. It'll go through a first revision through our OSBP people that will look at it, review it, ask questions. It will move from there to JLBC, the Budget Committee, for the legislature. They will review it, kick holes in it if they can, and then this would go through the legislature next year with this being enacted by July of 2021. So that being said, I just wanted to give you a really brief update of, and it is in your packet, but let me see if I can share this really quick, of where we came from. Let me go here. Hold on. Sorry. Let me go here. Share. So we ended the year. So if you can see my screen, you should see a spreadsheet.
Uh-huh.
Okay, great. So this was how we ended fiscal 20. We were, in terms of where we were with our expenses, we were under expenses by about $20,000. We were, this revenue here, so there's two accounts. 2056 is our account for our operations, our daily operations, and our licensing activities. 3027 is Strife. So you look at, again, where we ended up, we were under what our appropriation was, which is where you want to be. And that will help us carry a little bit of that money forward into 2021 and into 2022. The dollar figure here for Strife shows that we ended up with $334,100 in revenue and, I mean, excuse me, in expenses. If we go over to our revenue side, it's going to show that we collected $272,500. I just want to make sure that we all are understanding that this $272.5 is really not what we collected. That also had a bond cash in of $86,000 that we cashed in the bond that it had to go into this particular account and then be pushed right back out to the students that were from Argosy. So the expenditure side would show the $334,000. So we had obviously a net loss of dollars out of Strife for this last year, that FY20.
Kevin, so I can understand. So you're saying we're not ending at 334?
No.
What are we ending at? What's the ending amount?
The ending amount for that particular, let me get my cash flow. Cash flow for this, so we're going to bring forward into this fiscal year, which is 21 that we're currently in. We brought in we're $87,000 that flowed into this year. Of that, we've already spent down. So if you were to ask me where we are today, we're at about $36,000.
Net.
Net that we have in the bank for that account. We are currently billing the non-regionally accredited institutions somewhere in the neighborhood of $180,000. And that is going to be coming in. We've got $36,000 already in that has come in that hasn't been added to that flow-through money that I just talked about. So by the time we get to October 1st, we believe, based upon the schools that are currently paying into Strife, we would bring in somewhere in that range of $180,000. And the reason why I can't give you a definitive amount is not everybody pays, because there are times where schools just go out of business and they don't pay it. That happened last year. That's happened every year that we've built. We can go after them and try to get them to pay. And I have had absolutely zero luck at getting them to do that. So again, we ended off fairly strong of 20, and moving into 21. So what I did want to provide you is kind of a cash flow going through, or show you our revenue and then give you an idea of the budget. So our cash flow for 2056, which is our operating account, we brought forward into the 2021 year a $241,600. So that's cash that's in our bank that we rolled into this year. By the time we go through our, and I'll explain our revenue here in a minute, we go through our revenue and our expenses, we are going to only bring through at the end of this year into 2022, $150,300. So, you know, an $80,000, $90,000 hit that we'll take this year that we will take off of our operating fund. That would roll into the 2022 budget of $150,300. And based on the revenue prediction that I have currently, we would take that down to $59,000 that we would roll into 2023. We had the conversation last year about our challenges with the operating budget moving forward. It's now, you know, kind of right in front of us in terms of the 2023. There's still some opportunity here that we have moving forward to try to go back to the legislature in this new upcoming year. Again, we don't know what the structure of the legislature is going to look like. We don't know if Democrats control one or two of the chambers or zero. Currently, they, you know, there's only a one in the Senate. There's only a one vote advantage for the Republicans. So, again, don't know what that's going to look like going forward, but that's something certainly that we're going to have to consider moving into the 2023 budget. Revenues for this year, for FY19 were $352.40. In 20 is $375.5. That one just ended. So we were a little bit above what we had anticipated for revenue in 20. 2021, I have $345,000 of revenue that is booked into our budget, and I would continue that same based on the projections that I made, the same budget moving forward with the $345,000 in revenue into 2022. Into our strife, it's going to maintain pretty consistent with the exception of the topic that we talked about at the beginning of the meeting today. Of whether or not we would have the ability, authority to bill the regionally accredited institutions. If that were the case, we did receive that nearly $700,000 in revenue, that would take us over the $500,000 minimum that we need to keep in the strife fund. Therefore, we would not have to bill any institution for depending upon where we come in, but it would be at least a number of years, 2 or 3 years, that we would not need to bill institutions. So, go ahead, Jennifer.
Can I tell you something that I did see that was an issue that you guys might want to look at, which is on the application, you guys asked what the number of new students are. Okay.
Correct.
For any institution that has an online presence, and especially with COVID, you're going to see that becomes an issue. If the number is butts and seats and number of new Arizona students, it is not the same number that you are asking for on the application as the number of new students. Does that make sense?
It does. We're asking the number of butts and seats.
Yes.
We're asking the number of online students that are registered in the state of Arizona. So their enrollment agreement and application states that I live in Peoria, Glendale, Flagstaff, wherever.
But that's not what the app says. So because so many institutions are launching online programs, and this is before COVID, right? I think we have to go back and look at the language on there, because that's not, I actually had it pulled and it's not what it says. So I think people are reporting higher numbers because they're reporting out-of-state students.
I'll have to go back and clarify yep. that, but yep, I don't.
That's fine.
I
just want to let you know. Yep.
Okay. Appreciate it. Uh-huh. All right. So moving forward, then the revenues, I gave you kind of an understanding of that. Currently, the revenues in 3027, which is strife, in 19, we took in $195,000, 20, $181,000. 21,176, and my proposed budget is 175.7 moving forward. So the revenues are pretty consistent. If we were to take a look at our overall budget, so what I'm proposing in the budget between last year's fiscal 21 and fiscal 22 is to remain fairly close with a $13,000 increase in expenses in FY22 that has primarily to do with increased fees that we need to pay for our licensing software. So that's really the budget is consistent through that period of time. And then the budget ask for this year for the Strife Fund would be it was 250. Sorry, 250, 250,300 in FY21, 264.3 in FY22, and that's going to be an increase. The reason for the money in there in terms of the increase has to do with our increased fees for the Secretary of State for storage fees. Now that we no longer use state archives, this is our second year utilizing. I think it's the second year or the end of our third, utilizing Iron Mountain. And the contract for Iron Mountain, which is not negotiated by us, it's negotiated by the Secretary of State, increased fairly substantially this upcoming year. You may have read some of it in the Arizona Republic, why the questions were of why we don't have an archives office anymore, and we put everything in a private over at Iron Mountain. So those are some of the challenges that we have. And the only things that aren't baked into this plan would be if we do share rent for the commission, that will decrease our rent, obviously, by 50%, which will be helpful. It does not include any of the regionals in the calculation for Strife. So I would like to see if there's any questions that you have in regard to the budget that I would like to submit on the first. Okay. If there are any questions if you review any additionally as you go through it, if there's other questions, please address those to me before I hit click and submit and go down and take my back to our three ring binders down to the Treasury Department and hand them in a hard copy that I have to take down to the Treasury on the first. So if you have anything before that, I would be happy to provide you any information that you have that you need. And with that, what we need is a motion from the board to approve the FY 2022 budget that all of you have the opportunity to review.
So moved. Glenn Tharp.
I can't make the motion. One of you
I just
have.
Did. So moved.
Oh, you made the move? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You made the
move. Glenn. Yeah. Tharp.
Who would like to second?
What? I'll second it. Scott.
Wallace. Great. Is there any other discussion on the budget? Hearing none. Ms. Kears, could you call the roll?
Of course, Mr. Glenn Tharp.
Aye.
Mr. Dick Lukey.
Aye.
Mr. Scott Wallace. Mr. Scott Wallace, your vote, please.
Scott.
I believe you may have muted yourself. I will go to Mr. Mike Romano.
Aye. I think he dropped off.
I think so too.
He did.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
he seconded the motion and then he dropped off.
I would give up too.
I'm done.
I'm over this. It's 2:43. Are we done?
Mr. Mike Romano, your vote, please.
Yes, aye.
Dr. Paul Mittman.
Aye.
And Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Aye, done.
Now it's Dr. Mittman's choice if we're done.
Well, we got call the public.
The public. Is there anyone in the public who would like to address the board?
There's only six of us and we're all right here.
It says 15.
I see seven. Sue and Scott and Wallace and seven four. More.
Sorry, I pushed the wrong button and disconnected.
All right, well, hearing none, I do want to say thank you to, there were some hard decisions made today, and I want to just acknowledge everyone's perseverance, and also Dr. Leck for
you know, really sticking to your guns about something that I know you felt strongly about over many times that we've encountered one of the schools today. So thank you to everyone.
It wasn't as bad as the apple cart guy, so I will take that. But I want to make sure everybody understands, I no matter what. So I'm in a weird position of understanding the spectrum of post-secondary from baccalaureate to doctoral. I literally am telling you guys what I think based on what I see. If you guys disagree, please do it. I'm not married to it. I'm just telling you based on my experience of 16 years or whatever, 20 years in high post-secondary, what I see. I feel bad because I'm not trying to hurt anybody. I just have concerns.
We appreciate that, Dr. Leck, and the schools have an opportunity to respond to it. So you're doing your part. They have to do theirs.
Right. And I think our unanimous vote demonstrated that we agreed wholeheartedly with you. So thank you.
Okay. I just need you guys to know, please.
It's a tough call, but it was the right call. And they have a chance to make it right. And this, you know, hopefully they'll take the opportunity. Okay. Right. So with that, I will ask for a motion to adjourn and a second. And then we will
so go. Moved.
Second.
So Mike Romano, Jennifer Leck, and this meeting is adjourned.
Hi.
Adios, amigos.
Adios.
See you, amigos.
Good evening, everybody. Be well.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, guys.